Okay, let's take a look at your 1320 WILS forecast. It is 17 right now, getting down to a low of 13 tonight with flurries. Tomorrow, a high of just 18. The low is going to be 10. And Friday, high of 17, low of 12 with more snow, but light, not too bad. My next guest, Peter Morici, economist, national columnist, professor at the University of Maryland. He says that there are some very key crises that President Trump may face that could derail his plans. Peter, great to have you on WILS.
Nice to be with you.
And you tweet a lot. You're at PMorici1, over 9,000 followers. How does that work? Just every several hours you send a tweet out?
No, I just, as I have to do interviews and publish articles, I send out copies and transcripts and things like that. I will send them out more than once simply because, you know, if people are following a lot of people, they go down in the queue and they get missed.
Uh-huh.
So I'll send them out a couple of times in the same day.
Do you read the comments you get, that kind of thing?
I read them, sure. I don't usually interact a lot with people, although sometimes I do.
Yeah?
If somebody says something nice, I say thank you.
What if they say something nasty? Do you get back to them?
No, I probably just leave it alone because the thing is the way Twitter works, if you send me a tweet that says something nasty, my followers don't see it unless I respond.
Ah, interesting.
And to be very honest with you, I really don't want to get into debates with people on Twitter. I use it as a mechanism for putting out my articles, and I do develop contact with some people that way, but I'm sort of selective about it simply because I'm a very busy guy.
What do you think,
I spend all my time on social media.
What do you think the way the president's use or the president-elect is using Twitter, how effective do you think that'll be for him?
Well, it depends on whether he tempers what he says. He's got to be careful about his facts. Presidents need to be careful about what they say, no matter what the medium. But the neat thing about Twitter is people see exactly what he said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he puts his words there, and it's exactly what he said. He doesn't have to limit himself to whatever it is, 160 characters or what have you, because you can always take a screenshot of something longer and put it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, he's not getting edited and screened and filtered by the mainstream media, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Do you think they've been unfair to him?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm. Just blatantly biased, is that it?
What's the word blatant mean? I think it's a cultural thing. You know, MSNBC now is devoting itself to propaganda about the Affordable Care Act and how wonderful it is, and there lots of gays are coming on TV and protesting the fact that Donald Trump is going to be president, when in fact he's not a homophobe. He's not anti-gay rights.
Mm-hmm.
He might not have been the person, say, to propose legislation for gay marriage, but you know, he's not standing there saying we have to repeal the Supreme Court decision or we have to do something about Roe v. Wade. The guy is not really a cultural conservative, but the left is treating him as if they sort of have this villain figure in their head, kind of a voodoo doll of the conservative they hate most, and that person probably doesn't exist.
There's this article by Jo Piazza. She's a mother, or about to be a mother. She wrote an L that's been circulating about how she's worried about raising a son under Donald Trump as president. And
I'd be worried about what kind of son she's going to raise if she writes an article like that. Poor child to be subject to psychological abuse.
Let me read you one line, get your thoughts. She writes, "How do I explain that grabbing a woman by her genitals is not an acceptable salutation when the man in charge of the country normalized it?" What do you think of that, the general concern from the liberal side on this?
Well, don't ask them to read the biography of Jack Kennedy.
Peter Morici with us, economist, a national columnist. Peter, your piece.
By the way, I was just reading about the biography of Joe Kennedy,
and
I started tracing down, you know, the son-in-laws of Joe Kennedy and so on and so forth, you know, the people that worked with Jack to become president. Jack's campaigns always ended up in debt. In the old days, banks would lend your money, which is absurd. I mean, today I don't think banks do very much of that, but campaigns end up in debt, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, he's a terribly, terribly rich person, Jack was. And Mr. Smith, one of his brother-in-laws who managed the family's finances, a financier, and their trust would offer 20 cents on a dollar right after the campaign and tell people if they didn't settle, what they would get would go down from there.
Wow, but
Donald Trump is a stinker about how he pays vendors, my goodness. But, you know, people on the left just seem to ignore that. You know, they just seem to ignore that. They seem to think that their people are perfect.
Well,
and
they don't
I would
talk
ask
about
that
Bill
woman
Clinton.
To explain to her if it's okay for the president of the United States, why it's not okay for, you know, Bill Clinton to goose Monica Lewinsky in the Oval Office. Now, I'm not condoning any of this activity, okay? I'm not condoning any of this activity. Women knowingly gave Bill Clinton a pass because he felt they were serving their agenda. Which had not, and a lot of that agenda had nothing to do with gender. Mm-hmm. It had to do with things like more welfare and things like that, how liberal you are on economic issues. So, you know, there's a lot of hypocrisy going around, and I have no patience. And why are we talking about it?
Good question. We'll move on then. Peter Morici.
Yeah, you invited me to talk about finance.
Well,
That's what I do. Okay?
I just wanted to throw it in there for a moment.
Peter, yeah, have fun with me. Yeah, I understand.
Well, tell me this, Peter. The crises you're talking about, you laid out four of them. Which would you say is the most likely crisis that Donald Trump is going to face as president?
I can't give you a most likely. The most serious crisis would be a collapse in China. The Chinese debt is, every time we get new information, the amount of debt in China goes up. Now, until recently, even at the time I wrote this article, I was really not aware that there was a lot of private sector debt that's denominated in dollars. Mm-hmm. Most of the debt over there is denominated in yuan, which means the Chinese government can just print more yuan so people can pay off the debts to each other. It might be inflationary. It might drive down the value of the currency, but it won't cause the country to collapse. What Greece couldn't do was print drachma anymore because it was in the euro business. But the thing is that it couldn't print euro, and the central bank wouldn't give it any or wouldn't give it any on good terms. And that's basically how we got through the financial crisis and averted the wholesale collapse of the country, was the Federal Reserve printed money, and the Treasury did more or less the same with the bonds that it put into the TARP. I mean, they were so close to being money that for the purposes of finance, they were.
Mm-hmm. So, if China,
now we basically printed money to cover private sector debt until the economy recovered. But now we're learning that China has a lot of dollar-denominated debt. That is, its private companies, as the Chinese government has tried to tighten credit, have been borrowing in dollars abroad. Uh-huh. And they're having trouble paying that back.
So how's
now,
it going to work?
That's where you get a crisis developing, fella.
And how quickly would that occur? I mean, how close to the edge would you say they are to a crisis?
You never really know. Mm-hmm. You never really know when a financial crisis is going to happen.
Now, is this something their own government can bail them out of?
No. No.
They cannot.
Well, the thing about it is they certainly have a lot of dollars they can use to bail them out because they have $3 trillion in reserves. In dollars, hard currency. But, you know, if they do that, it could cause an enormous amount of capital flight and drive the value of their currency down so far that a lot of, you know, the country just starts to go into a panic.
Is it clear how they ended up in such massive debt?
Yeah, the government encouraged it. The government encouraged companies to borrow, to expand, to export to the United States. For years and years, big state-owned enterprises and even smaller ones were able to roll over their debt. So if they ran at a loss so they could export, it didn't matter. Uh-huh. Just the government would always loan them more money. So you basically take in 90 cents, spend a dollar, the government lends you 10 cents. So next year it lends you 20 cents and then 30 cents and then 40 cents on a dollar, and it grows and grows and grows. But if you never have to pay it back, who cares? And so the government sort of encouraged this, both at the federal level, or the national level, and the provincial level.
Can Donald Trump leverage this when he's dealing with the Chinese, this problem they're having?
It's one of many things he can leverage, but there's no one leverage point that's going to get him what he wants. He has to go after China on all fronts. He has to press them about the South China Sea and probably challenge them militarily. We're going to have to send the Navy in there and push them around a little bit. We're going to have to challenge them on the treatment of Taiwan, perhaps give Taiwan special benefits and arrangements because they're putting the economic screws to Taiwan. Mm. Unfortunately, Taiwan has let itself become economically dependent on China.
Well, it sounds like some clouds there on the horizon. Peter Morici with us on WILS. You also say that we're in a housing bubble right now. How bad is it?
Well, it's not a lot. It's not like 2008, but it's getting there. The prices of property, say in Detroit, are not out of whack. I mean, they're low. But the prices of property in the coastal cities where the liberals live, okay, places like San Francisco and Seattle and New York and Washington, have gotten pretty frothy. because of very low interest rates. Now, as interest rates go the other way, it'll be tougher for buyers to afford those prices because the monthly payments will be bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that happens, it means that those... we could start to see problems in those housing markets.
Okay, but the changes we made in mortgages and so on, do you think that we're in a more stable position than we were before the last housing collapse?
We're supposed to be, but one never knows. Also, banks have been getting more lenient lately everywhere. In Britain, household debt is at a record high. It's up where it was before the crisis. So far, Americans have shown a lot of restraint in how much money they borrow outside of the area of mortgages. But they've shown very little restraint, for example, when it comes to student loans. And you can't escape student loans in bankruptcy. So basically, you've got a lot of young people who are indentured. You know, you borrow $50,000 to get a bachelor's degree from Roosevelt University in Chicago in American Studies, which is basically a curriculum about hating America. And I shouldn't pick on poor Roosevelt University. You get it from, you know, the University of Michigan and hating your mother, you know, hating your father, the crap that goes on over in the humanities colleges. That's where that woman was probably educated that you spoke about. That's the kind of woman that teaches in those places. These kids come out and they find out that they can't get jobs standing, you know, on a soapbox preaching how men are all rapists and there's all kinds of hate in the world and so on and so forth. They end up in Starbucks with a $50,000 debt, $100,000 debt, and then they can never spend any money on anything. They can't start a family. They can't buy a house. That is becoming a bigger and bigger problem. Mm-hmm. That is a major negative inheritance problem.
Is that because of the education they received, or?
It's a combination of several things. It's Barack Obama using higher education as a way of stimulating the economy to get out of the financial crisis. He encouraged a lot of people to go back to school. It's a product of how badly universities are run, both from a cost perspective and a curriculum perspective. And it's a product also of bad parenting. I mean, after all, your average 18-year-old doesn't walk up to the bank by himself and sign those papers. Usually his mommy and daddy has something to do with persuading him to sign those papers.
How do you see us really addressing the student debt issue, then?
I think at some point we're going to have a bailout.
Really?
And then we're going to have to change the rules so it doesn't happen again. We're going to have to start holding colleges more accountable to the education they give. We're going to have to compel them to lower costs. It's very much like the healthcare problem. You know, if you give people easy access to federal money, they drive up the price. The only thing that's been rising faster than the cost of medical services and health insurance has been higher education. Mm. It's skyrocketing out of control. It's at about twice the pace. It's insane. And really, what is it for? You know, more and more professors don't teach. You know, even in these little state colleges where professors used to be, you know, focused mostly on teaching, now they pretend to do research. What do? They write papers on gender inequity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They write papers on why Donald Trump's a bad person. They write papers about why Pierre Morici's a bad person.
Mm.
They write about identity politics. They write about all kinds of things like that that doesn't serve much of a positive social purpose. And so, you know, no surprise. The price of education is very high. The teachers don't teach. The students don't learn. The only thing that we know that grows in the American higher education system right now is debt.
The debt. So really, what, you'd want to major in economics nowadays in college, or maybe engineering?
Probably engineering is the best place to be. Economics as a discipline for a kid that's getting a bachelor's degree has sort of been superseded by what goes on in business schools. When I was a kid, business schools, you sat around and you read cases and you BS'd about, you know, strategy and stuff. Today they get really good technical skills in areas like finance. My son's got a finance degree.
Where is he working now?
Well, he also became a lawyer. He went to law school. He has a finance degree from Minnesota, which is a wonderful, wonderful university.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got a law degree from Cornell, and he left with good marketable skills and insanely liberal ideas. Christmas dinner was tough with my kids.
No kidding. So you guys don't see eye to eye on these kinds of issues?
Well, I got young kids. You know, they vote. My son is ambivalent about Trump, and my daughter voted for Clinton. So at Thanksgiving dinner, my daughter got dark meat.
Wow. Peter Morici, economist, national columnist, and he tweets regularly. Follow him on Twitter, at PMorrisi1, at PMorrisi1.
And to the millionth follower, I will give my thanks.
Over 9,000 followers. How fast do you pick them up in terms of the numbers?
It's not at a lightning pace. It's about 100. It's a couple hundred a month. Wow. I've been on Twitter 4 years, maybe.
That's pretty good, though. That's
well, steady. But you know, when you write a column, I mean, you know, people read your column and they go sign up.
Yeah. There they are. Peter, enjoyed it. Thank you very much for joining us on WILS.
Try to stay out of trouble, please.
We'll talk again.